Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 4th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Higher Education, Pribinow Sees Value of Millikan. New President looks forward to being part of community. Millikan University's new president, Dean Pribinow, is a fan of small, private universities. Some of my most transformative experiences have been at small, private institutions, both for me as an undergraduate and through my work at my two previous institutions, he said. I see the value of small regional institutions and the access they provide to students, the contributions and engagement with local communities, and it's where I feel my truest sense of calling to these institutions. Pribinow's first day as president will be July 1st, but in the meantime he's making regular visits to Millikan to get to know the students and staff and looking forward to being involved in the Decatur community as well. He replaces former president Jim Reynolds, who retired in March. The chairman of the university's board of trustees, Ronald Branch, will serve as interim president until July. Pribinow considers himself a native of Wisconsin, where his father was a Lutheran pastor. He's one of six children. The family spent several years living in Iowa while their father started a chaplaincy program there, while returning to Wisconsin when Pribinow was a junior in high school. He earned his bachelor's degree in English at Luther College in southern Wisconsin and taught high school English for 3 years before pursuing a master's degree at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater and a doctorate at the university's Madison campus. He worked at large public universities before making the shift to private institutions 21 years ago, spending the last 5 years at Elmhurst University in suburban Chicago. Millikan provides housing for the president at 4 Millikan Place, a Frank Lloyd Wright home, which takes one task off Pribinow's plate as he and his wife, Chris Michelson, prepare to move to Decatur. The house, Pribinow said, is set up specifically so the president can host social gatherings, and he's looking forward to that. He and his wife are empty nesters with six grown children. Three are hers, three are his, between them, and will be bringing their Tibetan Terrier, Marlin, along. Michelson is a tenured professor at Morningside University in Sioux City, Iowa, but her job is remote, teaching a graduate program for working educators over the internet, so she can do her work from any location. The love that people have for this place is quite something, Pribinow said. I've had time to interact with students and faculty and staff and community members, and it's just amazing the fondness that people have for this place and the dedication and loyalty. Yesterday we had a reception with students, and to hear them talk about their experiences and their talents and their ideas, it's inspiring, really. And we feel honored to have this opportunity to provide leadership at Millikan. Some of the students taught Pribinow to do the electric slide, he said with a chuckle, and somewhere there is a video of that, which he hopes never sees the light of day. In college, he played football, though he also had a joke about that. I was on the team, he said. I told them, I think I still have a year of eligibility left if they need another player. He's also a musician who plays the guitar and comes from a musical family whose favorite activity when they get together is singing. They all spend a lot of time singing and playing in church, and he's also looking forward to finding a church home in Decatur when he moves here. These transition periods take some time, he said. It's been lovely to take some time and come down and meet people here. We plan to do that a few more times before July 1st. And the photo here on page, photos on page A3 are of him. The top one is that shows the new president, Dean Pribinow, posing for portraits at Millikan University in Decatur on Tuesday, April 1st. And the top one, he's sitting on a bench on campus. And in the bottom one, he's standing. And he wears a bow tie and a suit jacket, a sports jacket, with the Millikan building and lamppost behind him. And the front page photo is another one of him standing, posing for a portrait at Millikan University on Indicator on Tuesday, April 1st. And he's wearing a blue jacket, blue shirt, and a blue and white, quite a big bow tie. And I don't know which Millikan building this is, but it's a very attractive one. And there's fresh green leaves coming out on the trees. Spring picture. Also on the front page, economy. Pritzker touts Illinois trade. Governor visits Mexico, calls for stable relations. As he wrapped up a four-day trade mission to Mexico, Governor J.B. Pritzker said he heard a consistent message from the country's business and political leaders. The U.S. federal government must reestablish stability and consistency in the U.S.-Mexico relationship. As a former business person, I get this, said Pritzker, speaking with reporters Wednesday via a web conference from Mexico City. I understand what they're saying. You can't make decisions about where and when to invest until you have an idea of what the ground rules are. Steady, reliable leadership will help our respective nations, our respective businesses, and our peoples to flourish, he said. Pritzker and a 70-person Illinois delegation traveled to Mexico with the mission of strengthening economic ties, especially in the agriculture, finance, and manufacturing sectors. The trip came during a time of turmoil in the U.S.-Mexican relationship, amid President Donald Trump's broader push to impose tariffs on allies and adversaries alike in a bid to boost domestic manufacturing and penalize countries for what he believes are unfair trade practices. In a social media post, Trump declared Wednesday, the day he planned to announce a new round of tariffs, as Liberation Day. Later that day, Trump announced the imposition of 10% tariffs on imports from all countries besides Canada and Mexico. He also slapped additional tariffs on dozens more countries that the administration has said treat the U.S. unfairly. Trump earlier this year announced a blanket 25% tariffs against Canadian and Mexican imports, but delayed their effective date. Then in early March, he again paused tariffs on goods covered under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, but that is expected to be lifted. Trump also imposed a 25% tariffs on the imports of steel and aluminum, a 25% tariff on imported cars and car parts is expected to take effect this week. Pritzker, one of Trump's most pugnacious critics, has derided the tariffs as a tax on working families. They're not good for the economy, and these broad-based tariffs are very challenging and may lead, in fact, to a recession in the United States, Pritzker said. Here in Mexico, there is a deep concern. Elaborating, Pritzker said that the tariffs destroy some businesses in Mexico that U.S. companies rely on, such as auto parts suppliers. So the uncertainty that we've heard over and over again in the discussions with our Mexican counterparts is going to lead to them pulling back on making investments and potentially pulling back on providing the supply items that our U.S. businesses need, Pritzker said. We couldn't allay those concerns, but what we could do is remind them that in Illinois, we are a stable and reliable trade partner, and that when things settle down, that it will do well for them to do business with our companies in Illinois, Pritzker continued. Pritzker, who has enacted policies aimed at attracting electric vehicle producers and parts suppliers, along with supporting efforts that have led to Stellantis announcing the reopening of its Belvedere plant, acknowledged that targeted tariffs can be useful to boost domestic production in certain industries. But he said they are not something that you impose across the board, citing the price increases that could result on consumer goods like cars. Pritzker added that the integrated supply chain between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico also makes tariffs nearly impossible to tally. Then there's always the specter of retaliatory tariffs on U.S.-made products. R.J. Scaringe, CEO of EV maker Rivian Automotive, told Bloomberg earlier this week that our production footprint may be different than what we were initially planning, depending on how the dust settles on the latest round of tariffs. The company currently produces all of its vehicles at the Normal plant, which is also expanding. I can tell you that the across-the-board taxes, the tariffs that Trump is intending to impose both on Canada and Mexico, whatever they end up being, is going to certainly have a massive negative impact on Ford, Pritzker said, referencing the auto giant's assembly plant on Chicago's south side. And for Stellantis, which is rebuilding and growing a plant in Belvedere, and for Rivian, which is already building cars in Normal, they will be less affected, he said. But I can guarantee you there are businesses in the United States that would like to see certain kinds of targeted tariffs. But this across-the-board nature of it is going to cost the average consumer. Illinois exports to Mexico totaled $13 billion in 2024, according to the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, making it the state's second-largest export market after Canada. The state imported more than $19 billion worth of products from Mexico, making it the state's third-largest import market after Canada and China. During this week's trip, the Illinois delegation heard from Mexican manufacturing companies who are key players in the energy supply chain that are interested in building production facilities in Illinois, Pritzker said. Pritzker also met with site selectors to talk up the state's workforce, supply of electricity, transportation, and logistics assets, and its infrastructure. Before leaving Wednesday, he said he planned to sit down with Mexican financiers and venture capitalists about investing in the state's high-tech sector. It is part of my job as governor to be the chief marketing officer for Illinois and to pitch companies and investors on why Illinois is the best state in the U.S. to do business in, Pritzker said. During his time in office, Pritzker has focused on building out the state's previously sluggish economic development infrastructure. This Team Illinois approach has included a shift in focus within the state's economic development agencies to offer white-glove service to businesses looking to expand or relocate in Illinois. The state has also enacted a boosted menu of targeting incentives and tax credits to make it more competitive. Pritzker has been hands-on in the effort, perhaps more so than any governor since Jim Thompson, a Republican who served from 1977 to 1991. Pritzker said that he has made international trade missions a central part of my economic mission, noting that he has led previous missions to Canada, Japan, and the United Kingdom. Pritzker said his administration will be working tirelessly in the coming months to track down every single lead and bring every dollar of potential investment for our communities that has resulted from this visit to Mexico. The governor and delegation of state officials and business leaders plan to return to Illinois on Wednesday. Some of those accompanying Pritzker on the trip were Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello, DCEO Director Kristen Richards, Deputy Governor Andy Menar, Intersect Illinois Chairman John Atkinson, and Intersect Illinois CEO Christy George. Illinois Manufacturers Association CEO Mark Densler and Illinois Retail Merchants Association CEO Rob Carr. From Central Illinois, Federico Gorbea of Archer Daniels Midland Company, Kara Demirjian Huss of TCCI Manufacturing Indicator, Nicole Bateman of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, and Patrick Hoban of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council were part of the delegation. The cost of the trip to state taxpayers will not be known until delegation members fill out and submit their paperwork, said Pritzker spokesman Alex Guff. And the photo here shows Governor J.B. Pritzker. He's led a 70-person trade mission to Mexico from March 30th to April 2nd. So they must be back in Illinois now. And it's, we see them sitting at a table with several people and the American flag and the Illinois flag and the Mexican flag. And I don't know if that's a Mexican state flag there in the background. In more local news on page A2, probation ordered for obstruction. A woman who had been charged with murder and the robbery and shooting death of a male friend walked out of court Wednesday with a sentence of 30 months probation. In the end, prosecutors said they just didn't have the evidence to support murder charges against Markaya L. Curry Willis in the February 6, 2023 death of 30-year-old Decatur man Cameron K. Taylor. Five alternate murder charges were dropped in Macon County Circuit Court, along with two counts of armed robbery. Instead, as a part of a plea deal, the 25-year-old defendant admitted a charge of obstruction of justice. She was also sentenced to 136 days in the jail, but that was canceled out with credit for time already spent in custody. Investigations by Decatur Police Department detectives had pointed to Curry Willis as the bait in a trap to lure Taylor to her home so several male accomplices could rob him. When the brave victim realized he was in trouble and fought back as the trap was sprung in her bedroom, he was cut down in a hail of bullets. Jarvis J. McClelland, 28, was sentenced March 14th to 20 years in prison after pleading guilty to a charge of second-degree murder. And Curious R. Evans, 23, was punished with a 21-year sentence in November after he admitted a charge of armed robbery. Questions at Wednesday's sentencing hearing for Curry Willis, Special Prosecutor Kate Kurtz told Presiding Judge Thomas Griffith that she could not prove the murder charge against Curry Willis. To substantiate that, Kurtz would have to establish the defendant had acted as the lure to ensnare the victim. But Kurtz said that there was evidence Curry Willis had known the men who killed Taylor and communicated with one of them earlier in the evening of the crime. Then she lied about the suspect's identities when questioned by detectives and only told what she knew some months later. Associates of hers, her friends, came into her house and kill another friend of hers, and her response is to lie to the police to not be cooperative for months until she was arrested on a different charge, Kurtz told the judge. She asked for prison time for Curry Willis, but defense attorney Caleb Brown said that his client deserved some sympathy over why she had initially lied to the police about what she knew. He said no suspects in the murder had been arrested when she was first interviewed, and she had good reason to fear naming them. At least one of them had said that they should kill Miss Curry Willis rather than leave a witness, Brown said. Her life was literally on the line for all she knew. Griffith said that there remained the possibility that Curry Willis had played a more active role in the robbery, but said he could not hand out punishments based on suspicion and innuendo. Passing sentence, the judge also acknowledged the suffering of the victim's family, which had been laid bare before the court. Melanie Thurman, the victim's mother, had earlier given a victim impact statement saying her son had been robbed of all the possibilities his life had to offer. I wonder what he was thinking in the last few minutes of his life when he was dealing with so many assailants at once, she said. I pray for justice and peace. My son didn't deserve to die in this manner, and I will forever honor his memory and keep his name alive. State to hit back in Slover case. Prosecution is about ready to hit back in the looming court battle to clear the names of a Decatur family found guilty of murder. Former Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott was granted leave at a court hearing Thursday to file a formal motion by the close of court business Friday, April 11th, in a bid to dismiss defense efforts to overturn previous guilty verdicts. The motion is the state's response to a defense motion seeking post-conviction relief in the 1996 shooting death of 23-year-old Decatur woman Karen Hearn Slover. Her former in-laws, Michael Slover Sr., 75, and 77-year-old Jeanette Slover, along with their son and the victim's ex-husband, Michael Slover Jr., were all convicted of her murder at a trial in 2002. Sentenced to more than 60 years, Michael Slover and Jeanette Slover have since died in prison, while Michael Slover Jr., 55, is now out on parole. Their case is being championed by the Illinois Innocence Project, which fights what it sees as a miscarriage of justice and claims the Slovers are innocent. Attorneys for the Illinois Innocence Project say they have compelling new DNA evidence which points to new suspects and rules the Slovers out. Those claims are rejected by Scott, who came out of retirement to fight the case. He counterclaims the DNA evidence is too poor and too contaminated to meet evidentiary standards. Speaking Thursday during a Macon County Circuit Court hearing before Judge Rodney Forbes, Scott said his motion to dismiss was ready to go. "My motion is prepared and it's being reviewed by a colleague," he told the judge. He said he had explained the situation to Illinois Innocence Project senior staff attorney Leanne Beyer, and she was happy with waiting until April 11th for the motion to be filed. Forbes then set the date and also gave Beyer another 60 days to file any further response she has to the state motion. Speaking after Thursday's hearing, Beyer anticipated it might be the fall before both sides are finally ready to argue their views in front of the judge. It will then be up to Forbes to decide whether the defense argument should be dismissed or whether they have raised enough doubt that new issues need to be examined, setting the stage for a future legal clash of forensic experts from either side. "Yes, we are fully confident in all of the evidence that shows the Slovers are innocent," Beyer told the Herald and Review. And there is a small headshot of the victim, Karen Hearn Slover, and the larger black and white photo is Illinois Innocence Project senior staff attorney Leanne Beyer walking out of a courtroom after a Macon County Circuit Court hearing regarding the Slover case in Decatur on Thursday, April 3rd. Also on page A2, child rape suspect seeks to fire attorney. The ex-teacher accused of raping one of her sixth-grade students told a judge on Thursday that she wanted to fire her defense attorney. Allie E. Bardfield, 33, had been represented by attorney Kevin Sanborn in the wake of her arrest by Mount Zion police a year ago on April 3, 2024. She is pleading not guilty to one count of predatory criminal sexual assault involving a boy, aged 11. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Rodney Forbes formally approved Sanborn's withdrawal from the case. No reason was stated in the open court, although Forbes did make reference to a letter he had received from Bardfield, a former Decatur public schools teacher who is being held in the Macon County Jail. Forbes told her he is not allowed to read such communications, and the letter had since been returned unopened. Bardfield told the judge that she now wanted to be represented by the Macon County Public Defender's Office. Forbes agreed after Bardfield, who had trouble raising her hand because she was handcuffed, swore in court that she had no employment and doesn't have any income from any source. Lindsay Evans, a public defender present in the courtroom, then stepped in to represent the defendant, and the judge set a pretrial hearing for April 17th. A sworn affidavit filed by the police about the case accused Bardfield of raping the boy after he spent the night at her home. The child's 34-year-old mother is quoted as saying she became suspicious about what had been going on when he returned home acting differently. Detectives later used coached text messaging and obtained an eavesdropping warrant to listen in on Bardfield's conversations with the boy as they built a case against her. Police said that she admitted having sex with the boy, swapping nude pictures with him, and paying the child $700 over several months. Allie stated that the 11-year-old male made sexual advances toward her, said Detectives Corey Janes, who signed the sworn affidavit. Judge Forbes also ruled Thursday that Barbfield must remain behind bars because she posed too great a danger to the community to be granted pretrial release. And there is a picture of her in the Macon County Court hearing in Decatur on Thursday, April 3rd. In more local news on page A3, Friday brings family fun to stage. Life has its challenges no matter the age. The cast of Decatur's Underground Theater will be performing the Disney version of Freaky Friday, a new musical, April 4th through the 6th and 11th through the 13th at the Decatur Civic Center. You get to see how people have to live in each other's shoes, said Ryan Rinchowso, director. You don't understand someone else until you've lived their life. The story follows a mother and a daughter who switch bodies and lives at an important time for their family. Shannon Jedlicka, 39, will be on stage as Catherine, the mom-turned-teenager. It's been a fun adventure, she said. It's not hard for me to get the role down. I have daughters. As well as telling a family story, the musical is a family project. Rinchowso, is co-directing the play with his 18-year-old daughter, Lily. I just need someone to bounce it off of, he said, getting his daughter involved. She's been such a help to me for getting all of my stuff together. Lily is also on stage as an actor. I get to play the mean girl, she said. The story of family conflict and eventual empathy is important, according to the actors. We're learning how to come together not only as a family, but also as friends, classmates, and teachers, said Lily. It's what can happen when everyone comes together and learns from each other. As an actor on stage for her first musical in several years, Jedlicka agrees. It's one big happy family, she said. This is a safe space. We're all here to support each other, cheering each other on, she said. Auditions for the upcoming play, Legally Blonde, are scheduled for July. Keep checking our Facebook page, Rinchowso said. The theater company's show themes have been flashbacks to the early 2000s, the director noted. We are always looking for more people to join our family, Rinchowso said. And once you're here, you are family. Lily said she had wanted to be part of the theater company. Decatur Underground Theater has been able to showcase several local talents in their productions. People come up and ask us where we find these people, Lily said. The answer is here. We have so much talent in our local community. You don't really know these talents until you come and see it, she said. And there are two pictures here. The one shows Arlo Denison and Shannon Jedlicka perform as Ellie and Catherine Blake, a mother and daughter who switch bodies during rehearsal for the Decatur Underground Theater production of Freaky Friday, a new musical, at the Decatur Civic Center on Wednesday, April 2nd. Well, that's past, and the other performances were April 4th and then 5th, 6th, and 11th, 12th, and 13th. So if you go, it's Freaky Friday, a new musical. It's 7 p.m. Friday today, and Saturday, April 4th, 5th, and 11th and 12th, 2 p.m. Sunday, April 6th and 13th. And it's at the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Tickets are $19 to $24 for adults, $15 for children 14 years old and younger, with fees. Tickets available online at the box office or by phone. Call 217-422-7300. Again, 422-7300. And on the web, it's www.decaturunderground.com. Again, decaturunderground.com. Then there's another picture of the cast doing Freaky Friday, a new musical. And it's several people on stage. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 4th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.